You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. And the main topic of today's episode is the win total projections that have been trickling out into the blogosphere. We are in mid-August, and so it is officially that time where everybody's kind of searching for content and wanting to put some stuff out there related to the upcoming season. Some of the more popular win projection models, including ESPN's via the Real Plus Minus model and Kevin Pelton, is out there now officially, as well as 538's Carmelo projection, which, as we'll see here in a minute, is a bit more optimistic regarding the Timberwolves. So today we're going to take a look at those. We will touch on the teams in the West that are ranked right around the Timberwolves and, of course, the Wolves themselves, but we won't go a whole lot deeper than that, especially with ESPN's, as they're part of ESPN Insider, and we can't simply read off what's behind a paywall, but we will talk about the Timberwolves ranking and the general reasoning behind it, according to Kevin Pelton. And we will talk about the teams, as I mentioned, that are directly above and below the Timberwolves, and if there's any big surprises that stand out. Those rankings were updated after the DeMarcus Cousins injury that was reported over the weekend, the potential torn ACL that will obviously knock him out for the season, which did actually impact the Lakers ranking a fair amount. And then we'll also, as I mentioned, talk about 538 and their projection, what it entails and why it's more optimistic than maybe ESPN's projection would be, and what their overall ranking, how they rank the Timberwolves in the grand scheme of the Western Conference as well. So we'll start with ESPN and Kevin Pelton, who does a fantastic job there. The reasoning behind the individual player, the reasoning behind the overall RPM, which stands for Real Plus Minus ranking, is based on the individual player RPM metric that's been at ESPN for a while. It's extremely well regarded, far better than some of the other individual statistics like player efficiency rating or PER, which was an original ESPN created by John Hollinger, who's still in the Memphis Grizzlies front office. It's RPM is more of an all-encompassing figure that tends to hit the nail on the head when it comes to players. It removes some of the noise regarding the other teammates on the floor. It can slightly overrate guys depending on playing time. For instance, Tyus Jones was frequently one of the best couple of guys in the league in RPM. I don't think anyone thinks he's a top 2 or 3 point guard in the league, but it does give you a sense for just how good he plays when he's on the floor. And so therefore it was pretty easy to argue he was one of the better backup point guards in the league. That's just one example of obviously a very Wolves centric example. But all that to say, ESPN's Real Plus Minus takes into account Pelton's take on minutes played for each player. So he's taking each individual player's RPM over the last 3 seasons and then assigning a projected minutes value, which he did not publish. And we'll get into 538s here in a minute, but they did publish the minutes values that they're assigning to each player on each team, which is one of the reasons why that peek behind the curtain gives us a sense, and we'll talk about this, but a sense for how the Wolves ended up where they did in their projections. But we don't get to see the assignments that Pelton gave each player for minutes, but that is part of it. And then also injury history is factored in. So basically the model takes the past 3 years of games played, which is largely rest and injuries that are impacting lower numbers of games played for players, and then it estimates what their games played will be for the 2019-20 campaign. So there's clearly a bit of some liberties taken there. There's certainly some noise, if there's players that have had some freak injuries and things like that, that there's no reason to necessarily project that they're going to happen again. But it's probably the best way to handle injuries for a projection model like this. And then also, and maybe this goes without saying, but this projection model, nor the 538 Carmelo projection model, can take coaching into account. And Pelton mentions this when he talks about the Spurs, that the Spurs frequently, I think it was something like 5 out of the last 6 years, have outperformed their projection by multiple wins because they have the best coach in the league and one of the best in history, probably best 2 or 3 coaches in history in Greg Popovich. And so it's pretty clear, pretty fair to assume that they're going to outperform their projection more often than not. So there's certainly some noise there. Nobody really knows what to expect, for instance, of Ryan Saunders. But the teams with the better, more established coaches, or like, for instance, Dallas and Rick Carlisle, tends to outperform projections because he's a really good coach. So that's important to consider as well. So let's talk just a little bit about what that Timberwolves number is. Or actually, first, let's talk a little bit about some of the teams that are right around the Timberwolves in the projection ranking. So Pelton's got, I'm not going to say them necessarily in order, because again, don't want to spoil what's behind the paywall entirely, but the usual suspects who you'd expect to be towards the top of the conference. Houston, despite the Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook swap, is still really good, and most of their team's intact. Denver was the second seed last year, and isn't going to get worse. The Clippers got a lot better with Kawhi Leonard. The Lakers are going to be a top team, even with the Cousins injury, although it looks like it knocked them down a slot or two in Pelton's ranking, potentially out of home court, if these rankings were to be copied and pasted into next April in the playoff seedings. Utah's very good again. Golden State will be good even without Durant and without Klay Thompson with his injury. And then kind of hovering around the end of the playoff picture is, in some order, Portland, Dallas, Sacramento, Minnesota, San Antonio are kind of the next block of five teams. According to the ESPN RPM projections with Kevin Pelton, Dallas has a 67% chance of making the playoffs, which was surprising to me. That's projecting Kristaps Porzingis coming back strong after missing all of last year due to injury. He hasn't played in almost a year and a half, or about a year and a half. Luka Doncic making another leap, or I guess it would be his first leap, but getting even better than he was in his first season. And then Portland, once again, outperforming at RPM. They have an outstanding coach in Terry Stotts. So those aren't really surprising, I think, and same with San Antonio, but I think where exactly they're ranked is what's more surprising there. So there's a grouping of Sacramento, Minnesota, and San Antonio, all within 1.3 wins of each other, according to ESPN's RPM. The Kings ranking is far different, and actually so is the Spurs, than what they are with 538's projection that we'll get to in our next segment, with the Timberwolves kind of falling right in the middle there, and they're ranked much better with 538 than both Sacramento and San Antonio. We'll dig into that just a bit more in just a moment here. But before we get any further, I do have to do our daily football mention, actually fantasy football mention this time. So I had the rookie draft for my dynasty league over the weekend, and have the auction draft that fills out the remaining rosters in a dynasty league. You carry forward roughly 14 to 16 players and then fill out the rest of your roster with a rookie league draft, and then an auction for any free agents that you want on your team for the upcoming season. So I've got the auction draft upcoming later this week. So safe to say I'm still catching up on research just a bit. I haven't had any drafts yet this year. So if you are playing fantasy football, make sure you're listening to Vinny Iyer and Locked On Fantasy Football, as Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering fantasy. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else, because then you are the same as everyone else. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and put you ahead all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider. All right, we're going to take a quick break. All right, jumping back into the discussion about the Timberwolves win projection at ESPN's RPM with Kevin Pelton. So the Timberwolves projection, their win projection is 39.5, and Pelton acknowledges in the couple sentences he writes about the Timberwolves, the blurb that goes along with the projection in the ESPN Insider article, that the Timberwolves could be slightly underrated because of Robert Covington's return, a player who has long been beloved by RPM, among other advanced metrics, as one of the league's best defensive wings, and also an effective offensive player because of the high volume of three-point attempts that he takes and the fact that he is an above league average three-point shooter as well. And he only played 22 games with the Wolves last year. The Wolves went 12-10 in those games. So we've talked about this already here on Locked On Wolves, but that can't be overstated, the return of Robert Covington this season for the Timberwolves. So it has a projection at 39.5. We discussed on a previous podcast that the Vegas over-under is 36.5 for the Timberwolves. And of course, last year they won 36 games. So clearly this would be a clear over. The playoff projection in terms of percent chance they make the playoffs, according to this projection model, is 32%. I think many Wolves fans would be happy with a 1-3 shot at the Wolves making the playoffs this year after really not being close last season to making the playoffs and squeaking in on the last day of the regular season the year prior, meaning that once out of the last 15 years they've made the playoffs and they didn't clinch until the last night of the regular season. So a 1-3 shot, that's pretty good. I think Timberwolves fans will take that, especially if you've been cheering for this team for more than the past couple of seasons. Sacramento's projection, which is slightly higher at 39.8 wins, so a negligible difference, is a little bit surprising. They did win 39 games last season, and were, you know, three games better than the Timberwolves. So it's not crazy to think that they're going to be better, although it's important to note they did drop Dave Yeager as their coach, and Yeager has is a fairly analytics-friendly head coach. So we'll see what that does to them. In the upcoming season, having Luke Walton now as the coach, also well regarded as a fairly good coach, but a change nonetheless. So we'll see how that plays. And then the San Antonio Spurs, who are a shade below, actually a full win below the Timberwolves in these rankings, given that they lost a couple of guys, really. Davis Bertans is the one that's noted by Pelton as somebody who has always ranked well in any ESPN's RPM metric. So I'm not expecting the Spurs to finish below the Timberwolves this year. I think if the Wolves squeak into the playoffs, San Antonio probably does too. It's just hard for me to imagine that happening. But an RPM ranking of 39.5 wins for the Timberwolves and 10th in the West is not bad. A 32% chance of the playoffs, as I mentioned, is something that many fans would be more than happy to take. So that's that. Now, moving on to 538. Let's just say 538 has been significantly kinder to the Timberwolves than Kevin Pelton. The Carmelo projection, much friendlier to the Timberwolves for this season. First, a quick look at what that projection is. There's an entire lengthy explanation as to how 538 does their NBA projections and really the history of how it's evolved, which I think says a lot. It shows that their projections they're growing and learning and getting better. So to really cut to the chase of the Carmelo projections, that the Carmelo projection takes into account multiple other metrics and projection models, including real plus minus, the ESPN metric that we just discussed, the box plus minus metric, which you can find at a number of different sites. Their Basketball Reference has one, for instance, but it can be different depending on the site that you go to. And then also a proprietary new 538 metric, a defense metric. So basically, Carmelo is taking into account three different projection models and spits out the Carmelo result to assist with the rankings. The third proprietary model is another crazy acronym put together by the folks at 538. Carmelo, by the way, does stand for Career Arc Regression Model Estimator with Local Optimization. Clearly, I think they call it on their website a backronym. They wanted to start with Carmelo and figured out the acronym from there. They did the same thing with their new defensive metric, their rating system called Draymond, which stands for Defensive Rating Accounting for Yielding Minimal Openness by Nearest Defender. So basically, they are trying to quantify the idea of minimizing openness for defensive players. So in today's NBA world, when spacing and ball movement is extremely important and teams are working and doing whatever they can to find open perimeter jump shots, this metric is created to try and measure how teams minimize that or how individual players minimize that. So all that to say, that also factors into the Carmelo ranking. So there is some sort of defensive metric that works in there, in addition to RPM and BPM, which are both also also take into account defense, although there are some issues with it, mainly related to how they measure individual players on defense, when obviously the entire defensive unit is extremely important. And for instance, Karl Anthony Towns playing with wing defenders like Andrew Wiggins, and name almost any other wing defender prior to last year that's not Jimmy Butler, clearly hasn't helped Karl Anthony Towns. For instance, say Zach LaVine, playing with Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine, those metrics still do attempt to measure defensive impact. So let's talk about the actual numbers and what Carmelo did spit out for the Timberwolves. Let's just say it's extremely favorable. The Timberwolves, according to Carmelo's projection as of right now, is, and if you're just joining us, if you just for some reason cut into like minute 16 of this podcast, when I say Carmelo's projection, I don't mean Carmelo Anthony. 538's Carmelo as an acronym projection on win total for the Timberwolves is 43 wins. That would be 7 wins better than last season, and 6.5 wins better than the Vegas projection, and 4 wins better, roughly, than the ESPN projection as of right now within the RPM model. Is saying that what it's saying that they'll do. The playoff odds, or the percent chance that the Wolves will make the playoffs, according to 538, as of right now, 49% chance of making the playoffs. That is 16% higher than Portland, when Portland did much better in ESPN's RPM rankings. It is, let's see where the Spurs go. Spurs are all the way down at 37 wins and a 21% chance, according to 538. The Kings, 33 wins and an 8% chance, whereas ESPN had the Kings narrowly edging out the Timberwolves in their projection model. So for the Kings, that's a swing of almost 7 wins and more than 25% in terms of percent chance to make the playoffs versus from ESPN to 538. That's the biggest discrepancy by far of the potential Western Conference playoff teams. In fact, Carmelo at 538 even has the Suns finishing much higher than the Kings, with twice as good of a chance of making the playoffs. The Kings playoff odds are fourth worst in the entire NBA, according to Carmelo, including the Eastern Conference, where, I mean, there's apparently virtually every team except the Knicks and the Cavs have a shot at making the playoffs. So why is this? I'm not entirely sure. Part of me wonders if this new Draymond metric is favor. Like, for instance, if the Draymond metric thinks more highly of Karl Anthony Towns than the defensive box score plus minus might, or the defensive RPM might, or maybe Robert Covington's even more of a star in Draymond than he might be in ESPN's RPM. There's a number of things there that aren't entirely clear. We don't really know, but at any rate, 538 generally does a pretty good job, as their metric has evolved over the years, of projecting what teams are going to do from a win total standpoint. If you compare them to the Las Vegas over-unders, they're pretty close to in line, and you know, pretty much every season. So clearly, there's something there. But as I said earlier about the Timberwolves' supposed 32% chance of making the playoffs, according to Kevin Pelton in ESPN, 49%, I mean, a coin flip. Timberwolves fans take that every day of the week. If there's a coin flip shot that your team is making the playoffs, especially coming into a season like this when there were no major acquisitions in the offseason by any real account, the two power forwards that both started for the team last year are gone. The backup point guard is gone. The team signed a bunch of guys on short 1 or 2 year deals. On its face, it seems kind of crazy that in the Western Conference, the Wolves would be a coin flip to make the playoffs. But the projection systems seem to think that they have somewhere between a coin flip and a 1-in-3 shot at doing it. And I think it's I mean, that means something. It means that those moves around the edges might be more significant than at first glance. I have a couple more thoughts on the actual rotation that 538 used to get this projection. So we're going to get that into that here in just a moment. But first, before we take our second and final break of the podcast, I do have to let you know that the new Locked On NFL show continues to be on fire. Last week, it was one of the most listened to NFL shows as we gear up for the NFL season with the expert analysis of former NFL scout Matt Williamson and hosted by Brian Peacock. Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL with Matt's unique take on the game. Follow Locked On NFL now on your favorite podcast provider. All right, in our final segment, we are going to dig a little bit deeper. Unlike the ESPN RPM projections with Kevin Pelton, the 538 projections, if you go team by team, there's a handy drop down if you head over to their 2020 NBA projections where you can select an individual team and look a little bit deeper. And you can do this throughout the season. They've been doing this now for a few years where you can look at their playoff odds as the season goes on. And so they have it really from, I think, the beginning of August through the playoffs next year or for next season. They also go into the roster depth chart and have a projected rotation, which will change to the actual rotation as the season gets going. So that means that some teams will see some significant fluctuation early in their projections at 538, just based on expected rotation versus actual rotation. There's also an option to toggle for full strength rotation in case there are, and when there are, unfortunately, significant injuries that alter a team's actual rotation. So this is just interesting to me. It's certainly not gospel, and I'd be curious to find out how they came up with these projections. The rotation projection at 538, which again, Kevin Pelton says he did as well for his model, but those are not published at ESPN. So this peek behind the curtains here at 538 is really, really kind of cool. It's actually pretty good. Their projections for what the rotation will look like in terms of minutes. Not too far off from what we did here at Locked On Wolves last week and from what I've written about at Dunking with Wolves as well. They have Karl-Anthony Towns at 36 minutes a game, which is maybe just a little bit high, playing all his minutes at center. Wiggins playing 34 minutes a game, which I do think is high. It's in line with his career number, but I do think the Wolves will trim that back a bit this year, playing at the three for 34 minutes. Covington playing 30 minutes, and weirdly, they have 29 of his minutes at power forward and one at small forward. I think that's going to be a little bit more of an even split depending on matchups. They have Josh Okogie playing 27 minutes at shooting guard. I also think that's a little bit high. I think depending on, again, matchups and how he plays early on, he could be much closer to 20 minutes a game. Jeff Teague playing 26 minutes at point guard with Shabazz Napier getting the other 20, or I guess 20 minutes, and then Tyrone Wallace, for some reason, getting 2 minutes at point guard. I'm not even sure Wallace makes the team myself. Jarrett Culver playing 21 minutes, split between shooting guard and small forward. Noah Vonleh, 19 minutes at power forward, backing up Covington. And then Jordan, this is kind of where it gets weird, are these next three. So they have Jordan Bell playing 10 minutes at center behind Karl-Anthony Towns, with Gorgui Dieng playing 2 minutes at center. And then the projection also has Trevion Graham playing 13 minutes, split between shooting guard and small forward, and Jake Lehman 0 minutes per game. So the only guys that has playing zero minutes are Kata Bates Diop, Lehman, and then Naz Reid and two-way player Jordan McLaughlin. I don't think the Wolves sign and traded for Jake Lehman for him to not play. And according to the player rating that's here on this chart on 538, his overall mark is going to be a little bit better than Graham anyways. He's essentially the same from a plus-minus perspective on defense and better on offense than Graham. So I would be shocked if Trevion Graham played 13 minutes and Jake Lehman played zero. That, to me, is the biggest swing, and it probably doesn't really impact the final win total in a projection model like this a whole lot. I just think it's weird that Lehman was a complete oversight. And then also, Jordan Bell only playing 10 minutes would be a shock. I think he's much more likely to be in the 20 to 24 minutes a game range, and I think he splits time between the 4 and the 5. I think he'll see some minutes at the 4 next to Karl-Anthony Towns ahead of Vonleh, with Covington sliding to the 3 depending on matchups. Maybe not early on. I think he's probably the primary backup at center, with Towns playing 34 minutes a game and Bell playing 14 and Gorgui Dieng not playing at all. I think that's entirely feasible. But only 10 minutes a game for Jordan Bell would be a surprise. And according to this player rating measure that they have here on the right-hand side, Bell's a clear plus player on offense, and, you know, fairly average on defense. But I think it's a little bit of an oversight, or a wrong assumption, I guess, to have him only playing 10 minutes per game. So assuming that those flip and Jake Lehman's getting those Graham minutes and probably some of those Okogie minutes and something more like 20 per game, and Bell eating a little bit into Vonleh's minutes and taking those two from Gorgui Dieng and playing something like 20 to 24 minutes a game, I think that if we're going along down the same path as the 538 model, the Carmelo projection, I think it's fair to add another win or so to the Timberwolves total and call that 43 or 44 win season and a solid 50% chance at the playoffs. I think that's just as likely, if we're using this model, that taking some of those liberties are going to bump up their expected win total even a bit more. So if you're into looking at projection models, you're probably feeling pretty good about the Timberwolves this week. As you know, worst case scenario, according to ESPN, they're looking at, 38 or so wins and a shot at the playoffs, a 1-3 shot at the playoffs. If you're looking at, 38, 39 wins or something like that, if you're looking at 538's Carmelo projections, roughly 43 wins, 50% chance at the playoffs, either of those are better than what Vegas thinks, better than what the non-projection model predictions are going to be for sure as we get closer to that season on NBA TV and ESPN and all the other outlets. I think this is about as optimistic as it's going to get. So keep pointing back to these models. And if you want to feel really optimistic about the season, as we start hearing from some of the other quote unquote experts, I think things will be a little bit more doom and gloom for the Timberwolves related to their final win total for this season. But you don't have to listen to that right now. It's still August and optimism can still reign for sure. All right. Thank you for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. That's all we have tonight. Today, we will be back throughout the week as we move into our full-on preview mode. We're gearing up for several different previews in terms of prediction shows, league awards, playoff teams, total over-under breakdown, and then conference previews as well. So we're going to get into that here pretty quickly. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.